Hello, captive friends, and welcome to episode 100 of the Global Captive Podcast, supported by the EY Global Captive Network and hosted by me, Richard Kutcher. So, 100 episodes of GCP. I thought long and hard about whether we should do something extra special for this apparent milestone, but to be quite honest, we actually surpassed 100 episodes quite some time ago, including our GCP shorts, live episodes, the mini COVID-19 series, and the odd emergency or breaking news pod, which aren't actually numbered. We have released 246 episodes of the Global Captive Podcast since launching in March 2019. So with all that in mind, I just thought it may be disingenuous to make a big song and dance about GCP 100. But we do really appreciate all our listeners, those who have been listening from the very beginning, those who perhaps have discovered us more recently, and we couldn't keep making this pod and attract such quality guests without those listeners that we have all around the world. It does not mean, however, that this is not a special episode, because it is the first of two installments featuring recordings and interviews conducted at the Seeker International Conference, which I attended and spoke at in Scottsdale, Arizona from March 10th to the 12th. Later in the episode, you'll be hearing from Dan Toll, Seeker President, to give his reflections on another successful event, while I'll also be joined by Heather McClure, a Seeker board member, who gives us an update on Helio Risk, who she joined 1 year ago as General Counsel, Managing Partner and Chief Risk Officer. But first, I'm delighted to welcome Sandy Bigglestone, Vermont's Deputy Commissioner for Captive Insurance, who discusses the latest captive activity in the state, how 2024 has started, and the proposed changes to Vermont's captive legislation. So, Sandy, welcome back onto the Global Captive Podcast. Great to be recording with you in person here at Seeker in Scottsdale, Arizona. We already had, I think Vermont actually were the first out this year, domicile-wise, with the numbers from 2023. I know your team does a great job in collating all that data really, really efficiently. But for listeners maybe who haven't seen, kind of can you recap kind of what the activity was like for new captive formations, particularly in Vermont last year?
So in 2023, it was another, I would say, banner year. Mm. It was a year in Vermont where we licensed 38 new captives. That does not include cell formations. But what we find over the past several years now is that cell formations are keeping pace. Yeah. New cells are keeping pace with the number of new licenses. There's no direct correlation with those, but that's generally what we're finding in growth in terms of numbers. So 38 new licenses for 23. In the top 10 years of captive formations, yeah. Top 10 highest growth years in Vermont in all of 42 years. Yeah. So another really great, encouraging, and exciting year. I think a testament to Vermont as a domicile. We're solid. I'm gonna make sure in my tenure that we continue to be the gold standard. So of those 38, we had primarily single-parent captives, or pure captives as they're referred to in our law. There were 24. We had 6 new sponsored captive licenses that were issued.
And in Vermont, sponsored captive is a cell company, right?
Because in
Europe, we have a jurisdiction, we talk about protected cells, but we talk about them as sponsored often in the U.S. and in Vermont.
That's right. It's probably similar in other jurisdictions, even though the semantics are different. But they're sponsored captives. They have incorporated protected cells or protected cells by contract, and some sponsored captives have a mix of both.
Yeah.
So pretty speed to market, I would say, in most cases. Although in terms of sponsored captives, we've seen quite the mix of almost, full group programs in a cell, yeah. Or so it's really some of the uses are quite sophisticated. So those are generally out of the 38, the highest types that were formed. And the industry sectors, I think, is interesting. We're still seeing a little bit of everything from all industry sectors, but the highest industry sectors for 23 year manufacturing, no big surprise there, given the commercial market and the challenges that are going on, all organizations are experiencing, but in particular manufacturing. Insurance, so insurance companies and agents and brokers are forming captives for their needs. Real estate, healthcare, agriculture, professional service, education, retail, and the list goes on. So again, lots of uses, lots of need in the business world, in organizations, whether for-profit or nonprofit, still continues.
Fantastic. And when you mentioned sales there, sales definitely is a big kind of ongoing theme in the United States and in other jurisdictions as well. And I know obviously there's been a couple of high profile conversions of captives or group captives in Vermont into actually a sponsored structure. And that's quite interesting to see. So we're really seeing that kind of great utilization of sale companies by a whole different group of organizations. In terms of 2024 and how that started, we're recording on the 11th of March, so 2.5 months into the first quarter. How has 2024 started? I think you actually announced in the 2023 numbers you'd already licensed quite a few captives on day one.
Yeah, on day one, we had new licenses, and of course that work, all the due diligence and the work was being done in the fourth quarter of 23.
Yeah.
But they were aiming for a 1-1 license and commencing operations in 24. We typically have companies that straddle any given year in that way. So great start to the year, of course. We knew that was coming. And then more new business meetings are happening and applications are coming in from new business meetings that we previously held. So to date, we've licensed 14 companies total, which is a good start for 24. We have about a handful of applications in process to be licensed. So perhaps we'll see, you know, we don't like to predict, but perhaps we'll see about 20 by the end of the first quarter, which is pretty amazing if you think about last year we had 38 in total altogether, and in the second half of the year typically tends to be busiest.
You can put your feet up for the next next quarter, Sandy, because you're halfway there to last year's numbers.
I guess so. I can put my feet up. I love that.
I don't think you will be, because I think you're off to an NAIC meeting at the end of this week. But the other kind of developments in Vermont is at this time of year, there's always or usually some new captive legislation coming through. Some years, obviously, it's more substantial than others in terms of what's been changed or just tidying up. I think there's probably three areas that I spotted from the draft bill that I've read. It hasn't passed yet. I think we've seen that kind of progress through your legislature at the moment. Maybe by the time of airing, we'll have some news on that. But there's three areas that stood out to me. One was, I think, on the confidentiality side of your law. Can you talk a little bit about why that needed to be addressed and the kind of what's in there?
Yeah, thank you. You know, we always try to have a meaningful bill every year, whether it's housekeeping or something more substantive. And we had worked over the past couple years in different ways with our confidentiality, you know, interpreting and working within the confidentiality statute. And we had put in some changes last year to kind of fill some gaps in confidentiality in terms of the information that could be requested that we want to make sure we hold and protect. That's very important to captive insurance because it is private insurance for all intents and purposes. But there are times where we can share under certain circumstances. So we want to make sure, A, we have the right protections in place and have the ability to use discretion to share when needed. And oftentimes we would get company consent. That said, in working with the statute, we went down the route of making some changes, additional changes that we think were very important, and then working with our internal counsel, who was amazing, we took a step back and said, wouldn't it be great if we could go through the entire captive statute, all subchapters, all sections, to make sure that it really is consistent throughout and affords all of the right protections. So we went through the entire statute, and I think where we ended up was a very important update to streamline, make consistent, and then there are two main sections, 602, and then a section of the risk retention group statute, where all other sections kind of roll up into that main. And the way I think what is most important and meaningful is that I think that there will be likely, it's likely we'll never have to touch it in the future, which is pretty, you know, if you're going to make some changes here and there, yeah, I just think it makes it more streamlined, more comprehensive, easier to interpret on all levels, both internally in DFR and externally among various stakeholders.
And I think that's natural as well, because what that law, the original statute, is what, 40 years old? 41 years
42,
old?
42, yeah. 42
years
1981.
Old? 1981. So it makes sense that, particularly as we just discussed, obviously, you know, I don't know if it happened in the past, but you know, annually it's kind of added to and adjusted. So it kind of makes sense, I guess, to take a fresh look at it and just really go through it all, particularly on something specific like confidentiality, where you can say, I can imagine, I'm not saying that anyone has, but I can imagine with always amendments and things over years, that you can kind of tie yourself up in knots. And so it makes sense to kind of to clarify it all. We talked about the popularity of cells in Vermont. And I believe in the just draft bill, there is some other language changing regarding cells and converting captives into cells or cells into captives. Can you just talk us through that?
So there is a section that existed already in our cell, and it seems like we tweak our cell-sponsored captive cell legislation every year to just make it sure it's the most up-to-date and improved and easiest to use. It's a great tool for many organizations. And what we discovered was that while it's very clear in the statute that any cell can convert to any other type of captive, and they have done so. Say a cell wants to go off on its own, it's done incubating in the sponsored captive and wants to, you know, run its own insurance company, the cell owner. And so that's happened. But what we found that was lacking was explicit language allowing any type of insurance company, or captive insurance company, I should say, under Vermont statute, to convert into a cell. So another piece of important legislation.
Fantastic. And finally, parametrics is another area which we've talked a lot about on the podcast recently, and on captive intelligence as well, and increased interest. Not loads and loads of take up, but definitely people more intrigued and curious about maybe using parametric policy, parametrics triggers in their captive program in some way, whether it's the captive issuing a parametric policy or the captive buying parametric reinsurance. There's been some change in the language in relation to parametrics and captives, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep, another important amendment. I think, you know, again, these are all proposed. Hopefully the bill will be signed soon and passed through all the committees. It's moving in that direction, at least. But what the change to the parametric definition, a few years ago when we put in to make explicit that captives could enter into parametric contracts, we went a little too far. We wanted to be very conservative because there were rules, the federal rules relating to SEC, and where parametrics are accounted for as swaps or derivatives. But our experience so far has been parametric contracts can very much be structured as insurance contracts. And in fact, there are state commercial or traditional products out there that are insurance products that are parametric, that have parametric triggers and require proof of loss. So a few years ago, we went a little too far and too conservative to say captives can enter into parametric contracts. They must follow all state and federal rules, but parametric contracts are not insurance contracts. So this year's, because we have the necessary experience, we felt very confident, vetted with industry, went to the legislature and said, we need to remove some language so that we're not causing confusion, even though we believe we've seen the insurance contracts and we believe our law does allow for it. But that one area of the definition caused some confusion, and so that should absolutely take care of it.
Fantastic. And I think, yeah, hopefully we'll be talking to you more in the future about parametrics. I do think it is an area where we'll see quite a lot of innovation in captives, both on the kind of the front or the back end, as I said. So yeah, but probably a topic of conversation again for the future. Just finally, outside of Vermont, I know that you keep a close eye on things going on, you know, outside of the US, internationally, across the pond, in Europe. You were obviously in Luxembourg at the European Captive Forum in November last year, and in the UK as well. Obviously, I'm quite involved in some of the UK efforts to maybe set up some captive legislation, and we've been tracking very closely developments, particularly in France and then in Italy as well. What do you make of that kind of possible, or in the case of France already, in the case of UK, possible adoption and embrace of captives from these large industrial nations, which previously haven't particularly shown much interest or maybe even been skeptical or suspicious of what captives are and what they do?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. Captive insurance, the business of captive insurance, as you know, is global. So if there are jurisdictions in Europe that can successfully put in place laws and regulate the business, then European companies or companies around the globe have even more options as to where they want to place their captive business. I'm supportive of more jurisdictions. I'm watching the developments, and I think it's really exciting. And I think what I look forward to is developing relationships with regulators across the pond and, you know, kind of sharing and collaborating on, we'll just say, best practices. And we're always willing to share. We may have companies in common, right? Whether on a direct or a reinsurance basis. So I do think that there's some space for or some need in the marketplace, and I'm very excited for them.
Fantastic. Sandy, well, it's always a real pleasure to have you onto the Global Captive Podcast, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Yes, you too. Thank you, Richard.
Always great to hear from Sandy Bigglestone and get the latest from the largest captive domicile in the world. Right, next up is Heather McClure. Heather has a long history in captives, probably best known for her time as Chief Risk Officer at OU Medicine, where she ran their Vermont captive, but also after 2 years at Aon, she joined Helio Risk in April 2023. In our latest catch-up, Heather tells us why Helio was launched, how it is working with brokers on captive education, and her broader thoughts on development of the captive industry. Heather, welcome back onto the Global Captive Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a couple of years.
It has been a couple of years. And you've changed roles since we last spoke to you. So it's been almost a year since you joined Helio.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Helio and what your role is there.
Yeah, in fact, we were just talking earlier, it has been a year ago this month that Helio was founded in earnest by myself and my two partners, Kyle Sweet and Blake Kerr. We had been talking about it Kyle and I have been talking about it for years, even while we were both in different positions, just, you know, what would it look like if we started a captive firm that had, you know, these unique sort of aspects to it. If we had legal, if we had a financial person, like as we do now in Blake Kerr, who had accountants behind him and, you know, the tax expertise. But then we also had, you know, Kyle's expertise of being a captive owner. And as you know, I ran a captive for many years at a health system. And so if we combined all that, could we have sort of the best of all those worlds and really provide a different kind of client service? And so we did that. We started Helio a year ago, and it's been taking off. We've made some good hires. You know, Jesse Olson is our chief operating officer, and he's been great. He's really been able to sort of organize us and keep us on our toes in terms of just process and execution. So that's been wonderful.
And a great time as well to obviously enter the captive market as a new provider. We know that there is just more interest in captives than ever before. We don't need to repeat all the numbers and all those things, but I imagine particularly kind of in the region you're based as well, it's just, I know that you're kind of national facing, but it must be good to get onto the ground and to meet new business owners and kind of educate them and make them aware of captive solutions and hopefully get them to the point where they can get involved.
Absolutely. So our headquarters are in Oklahoma City. We have a physical office there where we're sort of boots on the ground. We also have offices in Dallas and Kansas City. We're expanding to the East Coast very soon. More on that another time. But we are excited about and have been excited and are still excited about this idea of spreading that the captive expertise within the Midwest and the middle part of the United States, because to your point, you know, there aren't very many captive management groups that actually have boots on the ground in that area. And so we're doing a lot of education with business owners there. There's a lot of energy, literal energy industry, oil and gas, and other energy businesses who are there, agriculture, just you name it, healthcare, all of that is there, but they really have, believe it or not, have not heard the good news of captives. And so we're there to be that scarce resource that they need and their conduit to the industry.
So on that topic then, what are some of the kind of common topics or common themes that you're hearing from as you are speaking to businesses and kind of prospective captive owners, people who are interested in having captives? Are there kind of any common themes and challenges that these companies are kind of coming up against at the moment?
Yeah, you know, the last few months, I would say, has been the most intense in terms of clients coming to us through a variety of sources, sometimes direct or sometimes other referrals, who are having difficulty with the property markets. And we are partnering with brokerages in a way that I couldn't have really foreseen. Mm. We've been doing a lot of education with commercial brokerages, sitting down in a room like this. Your listeners can't see the room, but we're on a round table and, you know, 20, 30 chairs, and sitting down in a private space, really educating commercial insurance producers about captives, because their concern is, yep, losing their commissions.
Don't,
right?
Don't be scared of them. I'm trying to help them, reassure them.
Exactly. And so I think that the time has come when they can no longer push back and tell their clients, oh, it's not a good idea,
yep,
right? Because, you know, years ago, that's what was happening. They were really only familiar with the commercial market solutions, and captives were competitors to them. It's no longer feasible really for them to say, you know, no, captive's not right for you anymore. They need to come to us and partner with us and then convert somehow to, you know, fee for service and actually provide those consulting services around designing an insurance program with some components in the commercial market, not just reinsurance, but maybe some or parts of lines stay in the commercial market, but then having that tool with the captive to be able to absorb the capacity that cannot be absorbed by the markets now.
Of course, as you say, like, you know, many years ago, it probably was easier for regional, smaller, independent brokerages to kind of ignore the captive proposition and kind of maybe warn their clients away from it.
Yes.
Rightly or wrongly. But now, with so much information out there everywhere, you know, clients will go somewhere else to get it and to get the help if their broker doesn't help them. So you kind of have to kind of get on board.
And that's what's happening. I mean, we're not beating down their doors. They are coming to us saying, okay, not in front of our clients, but, you know, give us a captive 101, empower us with information and data to put before our clients so that it becomes our idea. We don't, you know, if not, their clients are going to find their way to us eventually, or to another broker, to your point. And we've seen that happen quite a bit, where a client will come to us directly and say, I have been asking my broker, my trusted broker that I've had for, you know, 15 years, I've been asking him or her about captives for the last 2 years, and finally I'm just, you know, they're coming to us directly, and they're so, you know, frustrated by that point that they also want a new broker.
Yeah.
So we try to, you know, reach out. If we can repair that relationship, fine. If not, there, you know, there are many brokers that are willing to shepherd their client through the captive process.
So just to finish off then, outside of Helio, you are also on the Seeker board.
I am.
And obviously you're very, very familiar with the sector in the United States, having worked in it, as you say, both as a captive owner and on the kind of brokerage captive management side. How have you seen the captive industry and the people change in it and evolve, particularly the past 3 to 5 years? I guess I'm particularly kind of thinking just kind of post-COVID, really. Like, how have you seen the market change?
Yeah, you know, we had to pivot after COVID as an industry and really do a lot of focus on how were we going to attract that next generation of captive insurance professionals. And so, as you know, Seeker's been on the forefront of that in terms of the Next Gen Committee, the Amplify Women Committee, really brainstorming about how we can get folks excited in coming alongside us in this industry. And I think I've seen the fruits of that. We're now not just talking about it and lamenting what are our succession plans going to be? There's such a deficit, yada, yada. We are actually seeing now record numbers at our events, at Seeker events for Next Gen and Amplify Women. We're as you heard maybe earlier in this conference, 46% of our speakers are women this year, which is a record, and that's great. We're also doing a lot of sessions where we're making sure that we're trying to cover the perspective of the young professional, the sort of seasoned professional, and then the, you know, our, you know, forefathers and mothers who are really, you know, the experts.
And do you think it's a kind of a better and more appealing sector to work in for women and for younger people than perhaps it was previously? I think there's probably more allies, and there's, you know, I can see just from coming to this conference every year for the past 10 years, COVID aside, that it is younger.
Yeah.
And it is more vibrant.
It absolutely is. You're right. I am walking down the halls to the sessions, and I'm seeing people in their 20s, 30s.
And new faces.
New faces. They appear to be excited about it. They're asking questions in the sessions. I think they're excited too to get out of their apartments, out of their world, and come and really meet with the experts and learn. This is a great conference to come and just sit in the room with the experts who've been here for decades and absorb all that knowledge. I sort of wish that I had known that in my 20s and 30s, but I'm more than happy to mentor and love the idea that we all share to do that in our industry.
Well, Heather, as ever, absolute pleasure to have you onto the Global Captive Podcast.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you to Heather, and definitely keen to hear how Helio develops over the coming years. Now, last but certainly not least is Seeker President Dan Toll. It is customary for Dan and I to have a catch up on the final day of his conference, but this year we just did not get time to fit it in. Instead, I gave Dan a call last week once he had recovered from the post-event high to get his take on the week, the highlights, and other developments at the association. So, Dan, great to have you back onto the Global Captive Podcast. I mean, just 1 week after another successful Seeker International Conference, this time held in Scottsdale, Arizona. Dan, we usually do this, actually. We normally find some time on the final day, 10 minutes to sit down with the podcast equipment and kind of reflect. But I think we were both so busy this year, and it was such a busy conference that we didn't find that time, even though we kept saying to each other we were going to. And so we sat here a week after the conference, a bit of time to reflect. How do you reflect on last week and kind of the any highlights or key themes that came out of it for you?
Well, first of all, Richard, thank you for having me back on the pod. Always happy to tell the good story about captive insurance and certainly share my reflections and experience from the conference. Honestly, I was thrilled with the outcome. I thought there was just an incredible amount of positive energy. I mean, I always think great things happen when you can pull in all the smartest people in the industry to get together and share ideas. And that's really, really exciting. Certainly now, a week out from it, we've heard just tremendous feedback, and that's very satisfying for us and our team and for all the great sponsors we had and exhibitors and speakers. And so really excited about that. You ask about some of, you know, what we're busy, what we're hot. I mean, we had sessions on fronting and reinsurance that was standing room only, and the doors were open and people were standing outside because they were so eager to hear on these topics, which is a good problem to have. Next time we're going to have to put more room into those. Just from a numbers perspective, Richard, we had a record number of 665 attendees. We had about 250 first-time attendees. 24% of our attendees were captive owners, which is just fantastic. We had over 120 speakers, 46% of those were women. And again, I think we're able to draw from just all the talent in the captive industry to put together those great speaking panels. And I think it is one of the real differentiators with what the SEEK conference can bring. As I often like to say, you bring together the best of the best in the industry and the smartest individuals, and you put them on panels and you give them opportunities to collaborate and share their knowledge. Only good things will happen. Other sort of things, we are Next Gen and Amplify Women. We had a luncheon that we had invitation only, and every seat was filled, and we could have added more people. So again, those are good problems to have, and we're just super excited about the success that Amplify Women has had and Next Gen has had. And we have close to 350 subscribers that are interested in the programs, and that number continues to grow. We shared at the opening remarks that we had 46% of the speakers this year were women. And again, that is outstanding. We're very fortunate at SEEKA to be able to really take the best of the best from all the different jurisdictions and domiciles and bring them in and be our expert speakers. And I think that's a great bar we have set for the industry to have, you know, virtually equal men and women on panels. And I think that is just one of the small successes we've had with Amplify Women.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really stood out to me this year. And I've said this before, and I've said it after the last couple of years, because it has been a real trend and a real success story of SEEKA, and particularly since you took over at SEEKA. And I think, you know, it's important to give you credit that you started these initiatives, you know, when you first came in before this kind of real hard market hit. And it's been easy to tell a good story about captives in the last couple of years, because it has been a really exciting, booming time for the captive insurance industry. But I think you got a bit ahead of the game. And I'd say that, I mean, when did you join SEEKA, Dan? What year?
Oh, let me see. 2017 was when I joined. And I believe first day on the job was going to RIMS. So it's been a blur. I'd say without COVID, I think we would be much farther ahead of where we were. But COVID also gave us a great time to really... We had already launched Next Gen and Amplify Women, and it actually gave us a time to really kind of get organized. And we did a lot of stuff on Zoom and really kind of set the table for when COVID was over to just hit the ground running. One of the things I want to say about both Next Gen and Amplify Women is those were launched. The industry itself talked about how we're all aging and how people are retiring and we need to do things. And that conversation had been going on for a long time, but no one had really done anything about it. And my hope and goal for both of those programs is that other domiciles and other associations launch the same programs. And we're happy to help them with it, because this is really an industry initiative more than a SEEKA initiative. And we're glad to lead the way. But the only way this is going to be successful is to get other people on board.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to be sometimes skeptical about these kind of initiatives, because they can be almost token gestures, but they are what you make of them. And I think SEEKA and the industry in partnership has really made something of them. And that's what I was going to say, was that, you know, you took over in 2017, so your first conference would have been 2018. And I just think that there's been a very obvious changing demographic over time. And each of the, particularly post-COVID, each of the kind of last 3 years that I've been, it really has felt like a younger and more vibrant conference and a more vibrant industry as well. And I think that's real credit to you. So that aside from all the great content on show at the conference, I just think that the general, I think I said it in my email to you, kind of the general vibe of the conference just felt fantastic. And it's a really, really enjoyable place to go. And it is one of the highlights on my calendar every year, particularly when it comes to coming over, crossing the pond. So just thank you for putting it on, and already looking forward to Tucson, Arizona next year.
Well, no, and I thank you very much for those comments, Richard. We put a tremendous amount of energy. We have a lot, you know, our board's very involved. We have lots of volunteers and what have you. And honestly, I think I've already had three calls with staff, and we have another one next week with the full staff about what can we do better? You know, what was successful? Mm-hmm. What else should we try? And we're always trying to create a better experience. Again, we've been very fortunate to have great sponsorship and support, which allows us to put on more programs and have a nicer experience. But there's a lot of, you know, we always want to improve upon ourselves. And I do really look forward to getting the feedback we get after the conference. And again, keep trying to make it better and better.
And you obviously get a chance right at the start of the week to kind of share some opening comments. And you definitely re-emphasized your opinion that this is the golden age of captive insurance. You mentioned that in Luxembourg at the ECF in November last year. Do you feel that the kind of the wider industry really feels and is kind of benefiting from that sentiment, that reality?
I'm not sure the wider industry has picked up on the term, and that's fine. but I think it's, you know, I've been in this space for just about 30 years, and I try not to make that comment because it makes me feel old. But there is no doubt that we are in an incredibly sustained period of growth and opportunity for the captive industry. Most folks, you know, coming out of COVID and through COVID had their best year ever. And year after year after that, these are even better years. And, you know, I do think we've gotten to a point, you know, we are not the alternative market anymore. And yeah. we're at a point where this needs to be on everyone's front burner as a risk manager. And I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. And, you know, we did a lot of statistical data when I was in my prior role about, you know, when the market softens, do you lose the captives? Well, you might lose some captives, but overall, all the premium volume stays in. And it's pretty infrequent yeah. that someone who sets up a captive for all the right reasons decides after a few years, it's not worth it anymore. Most of them are figuring out how to, you know, increase their retentions, add different lines and what have you. And I think we're at a point where the industry is it may even get better, but we've certainly are in a sustained period. And whether folks want to call it the golden age or not, we are in an incredible time, and people really should reflect on what an awesome opportunity this is. I also think, just switching gears to the younger folks that are coming into the space, they should cherish this, you know, that this is, you know, they have an opportunity. You know, some captive managers are involved in licensing two or three captives a year. This is a time where they may involve with 20 captives a year. And again, the experience yeah. and the knowledge you get from just that kind of diversity will leapfrog them ahead of in their career with their expertise. I think this is just, it's a great time for industry. It's a great time for, you know, we talked about this, and part of the reason I brought this up at the European Captive Forum is you have these countries that in the past have not really embraced captive insurance, and now they're becoming captive domiciles, which I think is just an incredible testament to the validity and business purpose and value of captive insurance. And that message just resonates. And I think we're going to see great things in Europe, and we're going to continue to see great things in North America.
Yeah, it's funny, the two things you mentioned before about, you know, captives not being the alternative market anymore, but also you mentioned that those sessions on fronting and reinsurance being standing remotely. And I think that's a really nice example, actually, because obviously captives, people have previously talked about, you know, captives in competition with a commercial market or premium leaving a commercial market. I think kind of the popularity of those kind of fronting and reinsurance sessions shows what an important part the commercial market plays in supporting and enabling captives. And I think that's one of the reasons we have seen such amazing growth is we have seen so much more collaboration and so many more commercial market partners, whether they're brokers or fronters or reinsurers, realizing that they have to work with captives, you know, because that is a huge growing part of the business. And so many more clients are going down that route. And I think we're kind of in that cycle now where it's just going round and round, because as the commercial market embraces captives more, those kind of corporates that aren't in captives or don't have captives will kind of feel more able to enter into some kind of captive structure, whether it's a group captive, a cell, or a standalone captive, because they know that more and more of their commercial partners are kind of enabling it and almost encouraging them to do it. So I think that's a really interesting dynamic that's developed, you know, increasing over the last 5 years. Lastly, Dan, you also mentioned in your opening comments about maybe an increased investment, increased activity kind of lobbying wise at a federal level in the United States. Is there any particular reason for that, or any particular topic that maybe you're focused on, or is it just more of a kind of being primed so you are ready to respond if something arises?
There's no question that we continue to be a misunderstood industry, and we continue to get larger, our membership base, our premium volume overall. And we've always been in the game of advocacy, and maybe game is the wrong word, but there's just, I think, a deeper concern that with the law of unintended consequences, and we saw that with the non-admitted reinsurance reform act, where no one's thinking this might apply to captives, and I still don't think it applies to captives, but we need to have people in the room paying attention all the time. And I'm glad that we're doing that now with a top firm and on an annual basis. We're prepared to defend captives if we need to, but we're also wanting to be in those conversations to make sure that captives aren't inadvertently added to legislation or things that could negatively affect us.
Fantastic. Great. So Dan, as ever, real pleasure to have you on the podcast. I think you're going to be able to enjoy some vacation time soon. So I hope you enjoy that, and safe travels, and speak to you soon.
Thank you, Richard. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you to Dan for accommodating GCP at Seeker. It is great to get a recording space there and produce a GCP Live at the conference for each of the last 3 years. And thank you, of course, to Vermont's Sandy Beaglestone and Heather McClure of Helio Risk for joining me as well. As mentioned, there will be a second Seeker episode installment in the coming weeks, along with a few GCP shorts we recorded while at the conference. But in the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and see you next time, captives.